All right, so this week on the Writing Fiction podcast, Regina came up with the idea to talk about this quote from Anne Rice, which says, "To write something, you have to risk making a fool of yourself." And we're going to talk about that. But before that, let's talk about some business. You are working on some YouTube episodes, right?
Yes, I'm doing a series on the Omen films and book tie-ins, and I recorded the first one, and I'm in the process of editing it now. So I should probably have that out this weekend.
Awesome. Yeah, I should have my March reading wrap-up. I think I'm going to do that today. It won't be available tomorrow or something, but that's the one I'm going to be putting up. And what about?
And are you doing old school April?
Or now I am doing old school April, actually. I'm not sure how I'm going to do those videos yet, but I'm reading Live Girls, which I love it so far. It's very smutty. You would like it.
Oh, I love. Where did you find that? At a thrift store?
Yeah.
That was a find.
It was. Yeah, it was.
I think that book is actually maybe featured in Paperbacks from Hell.
Oh, really?
The cover that you have. Yeah, it's very collectible.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, it's really wild, and I'm enjoying the hell out of it.
Don't you love those 80s? I was watching Confession Time. I was watching Roadhouse last night.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And I just was dying laughing. It was such a joy. I know they remade it with Jake Gyllenhaal or something.
No, I didn't know they remade it.
Yeah, he's like really looking really like built in the pictures from it. But I don't know how they can possibly beat the 80s version. It's just, I don't think you could make that movie today.
Yeah.
In all its wonderful sliminess.
What's fun about this book is that it was written in the 80s, but it's also 1980s New York. So it's Times Square, which was really seedy. And so that's the location where a lot of this is taking place. And it's just that's so much fun because it takes you right back to that time period.
Well, you know, I lived a few blocks from Times Square during that time period. And there was no place to walk around, especially at night. It was pretty rough back then.
Yeah.
But I do kind of miss the atmosphere, the sleazy atmosphere.
Yeah, there's this sort of romanticized look at sleazy New York. Like even the Village back then.
The Village has changed so much.
And so I'm enjoying the book a lot. And so that actually checks off a lot of the old school April things on my list.
Did you join the Blue Barracudas?
I thought I did. I know like when I signed up I did, but I don't know where the list is to see if they have that there.
No, I don't either. I did fill out the Google form. It's pretty involved, but I'm just doing it having fun. I'm finishing up a new book. I've actually been reading some new fiction. So I'm finishing up a new book and then I'm going to start in on Old School April. Just mood reading through my pile of my TBR books.
If you don't know, we both have those YouTube channels and you can check them out. All that stuff is in the show notes.
And you can also listen to this podcast on YouTube.
Yeah, actually we get a lot of listeners on YouTube and people seem to comment more on YouTube than they do anywhere else. So I like that feature. Yeah, if you like listening to podcasts on YouTube, check it out. What I just did is I submitted my Fear of Clowns on March 31st.
Yay.
And so I named
good
it.
Good luck.
Yeah, I named it Under the Big Top. I don't know if it will work. I couldn't think of a name, but
that's a good name.
That is there. We'll see what they say. How long? They didn't take that long to get back to you, right? Like a week or was it more?
They rejected me almost immediately.
No, but I'm just curious to how, if it's.
No, it did. Yeah, it was. I think it was about 2 weeks.
2 weeks. All right. I just wanted to know like when I can expect my rejection.
You won't. I don't think you're going to get rejected.
I don't know.
It's a damn good story. I could see that. And I don't know what they're looking for, but to me that definitely.
Well, I did. I took your advice. I put it, the very opening line is inspired by true events. And
great.
And then it goes on. I did a lot of some changes and things, little things, but I like it a lot. So we'll see what happens. And now I'm working on a short story for, I think it's called Undertaker Books or something like that.
Oh, okay. Is this like another anthology?
I think it's just a digital book that, and oh, I guess it is an anthology, but it's a digital anthology with 10 stories is what they're trying to get. So that's really limited. But it's due April 30th.
And it's, the theme is Undertakers?
No, yeah, it's like graveyards. And I already had the story that I've been working on. So I just thought that's why I can just work this month on editing it. It's the story I have is The Ghouls of Dr. Forbes. And it's based on a true story of the body snatching that took place in Philadelphia in the late 1800s.
Oh, I don't know about that.
It's crazy. And it was all black people that were being dug up and brought to Jefferson Medical for bodies. It's awful.
Oh, I don't know about this.
Yeah.
Is it like the Mutter Museum? You know, they have...
I don't know.
Weird oddities.
Yeah.
They were using these people.
No, they were
for
using
like
for science,
medical
for medical, for the students. Yeah.
Oh, that's gross.
Not for experiments, but for like dissection and teaching students about.
But without permission.
No, you didn't really need it back then. But it wasn't allowed, but it wasn't needed. I don't think it was after this happened. They started making laws about this, and so what I did is I combined it with. There was a moment in Philadelphia's history where African Americans could vote. And there was this gang that called the Bully Brothers or something like that. I think they were Irish Catholic gang or something. That's the thing that I got up this morning to write, and I got like 100 words because I wrote this a while back when I was doing the typewriter stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's when I wrote it originally. So now, like, all the real history is out of my brain. So I'm, like, writing, and I'm like, wait a minute. What would that be in 18, you know?
Yeah.
And so now I'm like, I tried my best, but I got to read a lot more tonight to get refreshed the history in my head. But there was this Mr. Cotto was a very well-respected black man in Philadelphia. And on voting day, he got killed, along with, like, 6 other black people.
Oh.
So it was really
this is, like, a whole controversy.
Well, it was really dangerous, you know, for you to go and try to vote. And so my thing is on that, I'm taking it from that event because the actual discovery of this happening wasn't until like 10 years later. But I'm doing it from that day where 6 black men were killed and then having the grave robbers going that night and having the one sister of the one guy who got killed, like kind of being... what's going on. She falls asleep at the cemetery type thing and like wakes up and they're all digging up this stuff.
Do the bodies like take their revenge?
So no, that was my original, what I had originally was that she knew like voodoo and was able to arrive, bring her brother back to life. And that was going to be the thing. But then it was like, as a short story, I had this whole background of when they were in the Civil War and they would use this voodoo to bring soldiers back. But then I was like, no, it's just getting too much. And so what I have now is basically more, it's not really like monsters. There's nothing supernatural happening, but she's discovering what they're doing. And then she gets caught by them and is being, they're thinking, well, we got one more body. Cause they make like $8 a body.
Oh God.
Yeah.
I had never heard of this. It's horrible.
Yeah, and the doctor was like in Rittenhouse Square. Like that's where he lived, where all the rich people lived. Yeah, I read a lot on it. So it's basically historical fiction.
Hmm.
But it is ghoulish, so that's where the spooky... And so since they're looking for cemetery-type stuff, I'm going to submit that. But the pay is crap. It's like $20. Yeah.
$20. Wow. And we pay like a nice... nice price.
Yeah. Speaking of, if you want to write for bookworms, we pay very well.
We respect our authors now.
That's
just
right.
That. We do. I mean, we did that deliberately. I do see a lot of anthologies. And look, I'm not putting anyone down, I hope, because, you know, they pay what they can afford. For some people, a $20 honorarium or $10 honorarium. I did that before when we did the, what do you call it? The anthologies for the Horror Tube anthologies I published. We did like a $10 honorarium because it was for charity.
Right. Well, no, that's different. If it's for charity, fine. I don't think this is for charity. Just because, look, I know my story's worth more than $20, even if it was, even if it wasn't good. But I figured I'm just trying now to get a resume, right?
No, I understand.
And so that I'm hoping I can get into this one, and just I'm trying to get a resume. I'm not doing it your way, so I kind of like that about this podcast. You're very self-published, and, and I'm trying to not do that.
Because you're smart.
No, well, you know why? I'll tell you why. I don't want to. It's too much work that I don't have time for.
No, but look, we had mentioned this before. If you do, and it sounds like you're on a roll, which is great. If you do one, write one short story a month, let's say, by the end of the year, the end of, you know, in 6 months' time or a year's time, you're going to have some that got in to different anthologies and then some that maybe didn't. Now you have a collection.
Yeah.
Of orphans, and you can self-publish if you want or not, or submitting until they get sold.
Yeah. And so that's kind of...
So it's a win-win, whatever you do.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't want to currently work on self-publishing. First of all, I don't have a novel anyway. So I'm like, I'm not sure what that will be when I start with the novel, but I'm just doing the short stories just to improve my craft and then sending them out. The reason why I'm doing the submissions mostly is to have a deadline. That If I don't have a deadline, I don't get up. I'm not feeling like I need to get up and work.
No, I get it.
So I need that.
It's a good practice.
I'm not as, I guess, self-disciplined as some people can be. So that's why I need that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't write at all this week. I've been really lazy. So I've been doing other stuff, like editing videos, which takes a lot of time.
Oh, my God. I have friends that talk to me all the time. Oh, I was thinking of doing this as a YouTube video. I'm like, I said to him, I just posted an 8-minute YouTube video that took me over 2 hours to put together easily, because you got to record it, then you got to edit it, then you got to do all the other, like if you want it to be good, obviously if you just put on a camera and post it, but it for 8 minutes, it took hours and hours and hours.
I spent an entire day doing Batilda's monthly horoscopes videos, which are usually less than 5 minutes because, you know, I have to write. Well, Batilda has to write the copy, the rhymes, you know.
Now I'm worried.
Why?
Well, because you're talking as Batilda is a different person completely.
Oh, I know. Well, I want to respect my alter ego.
Yeah.
But, you know, writing it, then I do a whole makeup thing. Recording it takes at least an hour, maybe more, depending on how prepared I am. And then probably another couple hours to edit. So basically an entire day is spent on doing just that one video. And I am not complaining. I enjoy doing it, but that's why I didn't get any writing done that day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of work. Even podcasting, this, you know, we're talking, but after this, the time it takes to, because I have to, everything we talk about right now, I have to hear again at least twice.
Oh, so sorry. I listen back to them. I'm like, why didn't you cut that out?
Yeah, I cut a lot out, actually, you know, like whenever we go off on tangents that doesn't fit, then I'm like, I'm going to cut that out. But that takes a lot of, everybody's like, I want to do a podcast. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work that goes into the fact.
But you're very good at it. You're very good
at it. Like you just said, I'm not complaining. I love doing it. I love doing YouTube stuff. I'm just saying that for anybody thinking about this, it does take a lot of time to do all the other stuff that you don't see.
Yeah, and then I don't even deal with, like, I know you've done those, the shorts. I tried doing those, and I just was like, no, I can't. I will try to put a Patreon video up. I like to do one every week, which are, like, my shorts. But even those, they take a while, too.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, I mean, to complain.
No. And for writing, I just posted a newsletter about just the submission I just did, kind of what we talked about.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And so that's there. You can go to my newsletter. That's in the show notes. Kind of like my website at this point because it's got everything on there. So
yeah, I like your newsletters.
And I'm going to post some more stuff there as well. But I'm working on building that. So if you want to go check that out, that's in the show notes. And Regina has her blog, which is rstclair.com, right?
Yep, which is, I haven't done anything with in a couple weeks.
Yeah, but if you haven't checked it out, there's other stuff you can read.
Oh, yeah.
And Bookworms will be coming out next month. So what we want you to do is go buy the issues. We have them, bookwormshorror.etsy.com, also in the show notes. Support the show. Pick up the Bookworms. If you want to write for Bookworms, all that information is in the show notes as well. And it helps if you haven't purchased a Bookworms. It helps to read these zines to know what we look for.
Yes, that's true.
So it's always good advice, not just for us, but if you want to be published in something that you can get a hold of, you should pick that up to find out what they're looking for.
Yes, definitely.
All right, let's talk about this quote by Anne Rice. Let me read it again.
I love all quotes by Anne Rice. I think I loved her. I really miss her.
I saw a book at the thrift store by Christopher Rice, which is her son. Mm-hmm. I didn't pick it up, though.
So I have a few of his.
Do you like his stuff?
I haven't read them yet.
Oh, okay.
I want to. It's on my list.
Okay. So here we go. To write something, you have to risk making a fool of yourself. Let's discuss.
Well, I think this relates a lot to our last topic about, what was it, about not giving a crap.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all about confronting fears. And I think a big fear is that you've got to find to add to this little snippet, Carrie's mother. You know, they're all gonna laugh at you.
Oh yeah, I can find that. All right.
If you can find that. But confronting that and be willing to have to be laughed at, I think is great to free yourself of that by being a fool and embracing it. Like I was thinking about the fool card in the tarot. You know mm-hmm. anything about the fool card?
Yeah, I do.
So that's the first card in the tarot, and it's the zero is the number assigned to it. So it really is a beginning and an end of step. It shows like the figure usually stepping off a cliff with the dog yapping at its heels, trying to maybe warn him. But the look on the person's face, the fool's face, is complete oblivion and just kind of foolish happiness. But you know, the point is you can go off a cliff. So, but there's a lot of power in that. I mean, like I really think I was living the fool's card when I, you know, decided in my mid 40s to quit my job and become like an artist. You were around for that.
Yep.
But I just was like, I, you know, looking back, I'm like, what the hell was I thinking? But, you know, I was definitely living through the fool character doing that. Was it foolish? I'm sure a lot of people thought it was foolish. And, you know, you could look at it and say, well, she was really an idiot to do that. But at the same time, I became the, you know, creator that I am today, not saying I'm rich and famous from it, but I had to do that. You know, I remember being in a physics class once and kind of, not that I was ever good at science, but it did make sense about potential is more like a drop than a climb, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So your potential is there. And sometimes you just have to like step off the cliff a little bit to meet that potential. But it's also dangerous advice because you could blow up your whole life. You could get hurt. People are dependent on you. You know, there are risks involved, I guess is what I'm saying. So applying that to being a writer, you don't have to literally step off a cliff, but if you approach your work with that kind of foolish bravery, you can probably get a lot of great results. You see what I'm trying to say? I don't want anyone to literally hurt themselves like by jumping off a cliff.
Oh my
it's
God.
A metaphor.
I hope our listeners get that. Otherwise, I would tell you probably don't write.
You know what
you
I'm
need
saying,
to seek
James.
Help.
I feel like I'm talking in circles, but you know what I mean. It's a metaphor for risk, creative risk, and not being afraid of making an ass out of yourself. If you want to put it a different way, the fool is a very important archetype. you know, it, even going back to, I mean, I know this because I just wrote a short story called Aldo's Curse about a fool who is the beginning of the my Carney mythos, if you want to say. You can read that on my blog.
rsinclair.com, yeah.
You can read it for free. But it is about the fool that goes too far in insulting the king. Because the fool's job was always to be the court jester in the king's court. He would be the only one who would be able to make fun of the king and get away with it. So there was a lot of power in the fool's role. But then sometimes there are risks too, which I examine in my story. But you also think about people in entertainment. I'm trying to think of off the top of my head. I mean, comedians, someone like, well, Dave Chappelle is a good example of that court jester that, you know, that tells the truth and we all laugh. Sometimes maybe he goes too far and makes people upset, you know. Maybe he goes over the cliff. George Carlin was a great fool character. So it's a wonderful archetype, and applying it to your any art of your artistic endeavors can be very freeing and a lot of fun.
Right. I think people might be afraid when they hear this quote because they think, I don't want to look foolish, right? And this doesn't right. mean that what you're creating needs to be awful and silly that people look at it and like, oh, that's
no,
awful,
not
right?
At all.
The foolish part isn't about the art itself. It's about the risk there, about stepping right. off that cliff. And you know, Bradbury has a quote about stepping off a cliff and building wings as you're falling. And that's the idea. What we're trying to say is like you, when you get an idea, it might seem foolish. The story might seem foolish. And it, you know, it's fascinating.
Or you might feel like a fool doing it.
That's true too.
I mean, I remember when a lot of times, and we've discussed this before, when you decide, and sometimes it's best not to tell anyone until you've actually done it. But if you say, hey, you know what? I think I'm going to start painting. If you say it to the wrong person, you might get, oh, well, aren't you a little old to start painting? Why are you doing that? Don't you do enough? Why don't you do something that's going to make money? You know, you get these things, and then before you've even gotten out of, you know, you've hatched out of the egg, you're dead in the shell, you know?
I think
but the fool is like, doesn't care what anyone thinks, and just like, I'm going to do this. Hey, you know, it's like a guy that goes out, or girl, goes out and surfs like a really high wave and like almost kills himself. Like there's a risk involved.
And I think that over 90% of the population are not, they don't agree with this.
Right. The sane people don't agree with this. So that's why the fool is a very powerful card.
Right. And that's why I really do believe in keeping things to yourself, keeping that sacred, and only yes. allowing that to people you really trust, that understand you, because you'll come out and you, just like Regina just said, you will tell them something and they will just squash that right away.
Yes. And I have been, anyone who knows me personally knows this is true. And I do take pride in this. I'm the person you can go to talk to when you have a crazy idea. I will not discourage you.
Right.
In fact, I will be the one saying, yeah, let's do this. How can I help? Like, seriously, I really believe in that, because I know how important that is just to get a little bit of support and positivity, because most of the time you're not going to get that. And you need kind of someone saying, hey, yeah, that's cool. You want to make a movie? Yeah, let's do it. How do we get this? Because it's really amazing how many people will just put up obstacles in their own work before it's even out of the gate.
Yeah. So, fascinating.
It's fascinating. So it's like, yeah, let's, you don't want to be like take unnecessary risks. Like I'm thinking about with filmmaking, you know, you don't want to get arrested doing something like trespassing on people's property, which, you know, we certainly took some of those risks when we were shooting, when we were doing like indie film. But there's really, you do have to have some an adventurous spirit, which I think is what The Fool is really about.
Yeah, so I had a friend, I was taught, this literally happened yesterday, and we were at work, and I said, what did you want to do when you were a kid? He's like, I wanted to be a race car driver. And then All I did was give him ideas. I'm like, wow, you know, it seems like a possible thing you could still do. You know, he's not my age, he's younger, he loves cars, and then he's telling me about the money he's spending on his car. And then I'm like, He's like, well, you have to go to this class. I'm like, well, how much is the class? He tells me, I'm like, well, you're spending that on just your tires and things like that. Why don't you take the class? Well, then, and it was reasons why he couldn't do it. And I said, there's got to be something in that realm like you could start. And there is something, and we finally ended up with this thing called the 24-hour Lemon Le Mans. And so this, you have to have a car and everything set up for less than $500. And it's this race thing you can do. Now, there's other costs involved. But the point is, if you want to do something and you had that dream, it might seem foolish. But if you look into it, and you probably had, there is a way you can do it. And
definitely.
and not worry about, I'll tell you this, everything that you probably enjoy, it took a fool to get that, right?
Yeah.
If you're looking at the iPhone, I mean, everything, if you looked at them, it was Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak in a garage, young 20-somethings, early 20s, that started the richest company in the world at this point. And they had to be fools. And like, there's their whole motto back then was to think different and to be a rebel, which we talked about last week, I think.
Yeah.
And I think you really have to just go out there and believe in yourself and not worry when people tell you you're being foolish.
Yeah. I mean, and like I said, there are risks, and some artists have done really crazy things that you might think, well, this person is very selfish. I was just thinking of like Henry Miller. Became an artist, but he left his wife and family in poverty and then moved to Paris and lived among like the prostitutes. And, you know, and he wrote great books, but he made that choice. And I don't recommend that for everybody. I mean, that's like a personal thing, you know, like people have taken risks, and maybe some of those risks, they went too far. But if you apply that, not just to being an artist, but taking risks and risk being a fool in your work, I think is also part of what we're talking about, a big part of what we're talking about. There was a book that I just read. I told you I've been reading some new fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a book that was very promoted because it was in the gift bag when I went to StokerCon, like you get a bag of goodies. And this was one of the featured books, and it was called Everything the Darkness Eats by Eric LaRocca. Do you know this artist or this author?
I do not.
He also wrote, I guess he's considered like a extreme author. He wrote Things Have Gotten Worse Since We Last Spoke. That was kind of his breakout novella. I have not read this, but I read the book, and I'm like, I had so much fun with this book, and I went in cold, you know, and it's very graphic and a little silly in some ways, but like in a drive-in movie kind of way. So I really enjoyed it. And then I went on Goodreads, and I was shocked at how bad the reviews are. Like, he's got like a 2-point-something rating on this. And then I'm reading it and I'm thinking it's because people are taking this book way too seriously.
Yeah.
Because he is, I guess, a gay, queer author. So he's writing with that kind of representation and diversity in mind, which is great. But I felt like when I was reading the reviews, people were getting mad at him for writing a horror book, you know?
Well, that Live Evil book I'm reading would not work today for the audience that's out there. They would be finding a lot of things that they're like, that's not, I don't want to say politically correct, but they'll be like, that's not right.
Right.
And it's like, you know, like, you got to let that stuff go. I don't know how. I'm listening to Mr. Mercedes by Stephen King.
I like that book a lot.
And there's a lot of stuff. He says the N-word constantly. He has these weird jokes between the main character and his black friend, where the friend becomes Tyrone and starts talking like this. And I'm like, wow.
Oh, that's, well, you listen to the audiobook?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy on the audiobook.
It's been a long time since I read that.
But I'm enjoying the hell out of it. But if I
and
was...
Isn't the female character like, she's, I guess, on the spectrum, we would say today?
I don't know if I'm at that person yet. Or,
okay,
because it's a trilogy, so maybe she's not showing up yet.
No, I think she's in the first book. Because I only read the first book.
Okay. I don't know who we're talking about yet.
Oh, okay. No, what I was saying, like, reading this book, I think this author, I applaud him for having the courage to write the book he wanted to write. And even though he's getting a lot of criticism for it, is my point.
Yeah. And I don't think that means like you have to go out and be so off the wall.
No.
Right. That's something we're talking about, being foolish. That can be, if you're that person, you want to write that thing and it's really out there and you're not sure anybody's going to like it, that's probably the book you should probably write. Because right. If it's something you really want, like don't go and try to be weird and out there.
Like don't try to offend
right.
people.
Well, not only that, but don't try to be bizarre for the sake of being bizarre if it's not in you to be that way. You know, like
right,
you're
right.
going to force it and it's not going to work.
No, that's not going to work at all.
Just like I listened to Frank Zappa and I'm like, here's a guy who sat like and wrote and was like, that must have looked foolish, like Zappa putting stuff out, because his stuff is foolish, you know?
Yeah.
And it's goofy, but it's musically brilliant. And I think it's that kind of thing where it's like, he didn't want to just write something that was mainstream. That is Frank Zappa. He wrote what Frank yeah. Zappa wanted to write. And that was probably foolish, because I'm sure the record industry was like, what the hell is this?
Right.
You know?
But look, you have one life. You have one go around. Are you going to play it safe? I'm talking with, not that you should blow up your life. I keep feeling like I have to say.
Yeah, I don't know why you do. Yeah.
I don't know, because I don't want anyone to think I'm recommending people to, you know, blow up their lives. Like, you know, that's not good advice.
So,
but
yeah, we're talking about. Okay.
Well, here's another quote from an author, Erica Jong. Do you know Erica Jong?
I don't know.
She wrote
Sounds
Fear
familiar.
Of Flying. It was a big
Oh, yeah, Fear of Flying. Yeah.
Fear of Flying. She said, one of her quotes is, no one ever found wisdom without also being a fool.
Ooh, that's true.
So I think it's just like in your development as a person or as an artist, you pass through these different stages, and being a fool is one of them. And maybe we continue to go back there.
Well,
and
a
lot of the people that have been the innovators, like you were mentioning Steve Jobs and these guys and ladies, that they had to start out with kind of a foolishness in that going off into the unknown.
Yeah, I think when you talk about, we'll bring it back to Jaws. Spielberg says,
all roads lead back to Jaws.
It does. And Spielberg said that when he thinks of that movie, he has two words, courage and stupidity. Mm. And
there's a fine line between clever and stupid.
Yeah. And I think that is what you have to be okay with, is that you don't need to know everything. And we brought this up before, failing forward, or you had the other way. I forget what it was.
Fail quickly.
Yeah, fail quickly, fail forward. And what we're talking about is calculated risk. So Regina is in a position where maybe she has more time during the day to write, and I will be picking up my kid after this or something. So like, she can probably take more calculated risks than I can in certain ways. I could be Henry Miller and pick up and leave.
No, you're not
going
to do that.
I'm not going to do that, but I'm saying everybody has options. But what you're going to do is think, I would definitely say, if you're younger and you really don't have anything holding you back, that's when you take the most risk. This is no different than investing in the stock market. If you're young, they tell you, like, hey, be risky with your stuff, right? And and go out there and buy the stocks and, you know, try your best to be, you can be very risky because you have a lot of time to make up for it if you kind of do something wrong. If you're older, you try to be more conservative with your stock picks. And
yeah, and your body. Like, you know, you have to be careful. You don't want to maybe go
walking off a cliff.
Surf that wave when you're in your 50s as much as when you're in your 20s.
Right. And so if you are listening and you're younger, I mean,
you have no excuse.
No excuse. I don't want to hear it. But
we don't want to hear it. But isn't it funny how I think that, like, because of the programming, if you want to call it that, the conditioning from growing up, I think that a lot of people are less likely to take a risk in their 20s than when they're middle aged. Because when you reach that midpoint, you're like, oh, if I don't take a risk now, it's done. Like,
only that, but you start to understand why that is. And it's because in order for the rich people to stay rich, this is true. This is my opinion. In order for the rich people to stay rich, they need to program people that their job is to go through school and get this job and do this thing to keep the businesses going. And that keeps people who are ahead of all this stuff, the people with the money, they get to keep you guys running around trying to just keep the system in check. You know, it's like, you're going to go to school, you're going to go to college, you're going to get a job, and you're going to be this person, and this is the right thing to do. And that's put into everybody's head. And I think that you learn later, like, well, that kind of stupid. It didn't, you know, like, you're like, that, what a waste of time.
Well, I remember when I was, I guess, 19 years old, deciding that, you know, I remember making a decision. I was in school, I was, you know, in college, I was really in a very, you know, lonely and unhappy. And I met my, the guy I've been with for over 40 years in a poetry class. And I remember saying to myself, I'm going to, you know, get that guy to ask me out. I don't know how I maneuvered it, but, and then it was like, within a month, I quit school. I finished the semester. I met him in the spring. I finished the semester and we moved to New York together within a couple of months of knowing each other. And that was a huge risk. And it was the best time of my life, is my point. Like, that year when we went to New York and just like, we're young and in love and just, you know, and you could live in New York at the time and not have a lot of money. And just all those adventures that we had. My only regret is that I didn't have more adventures, because I would get like neurotic and worried about what I was doing.
Yeah, me too. Life,
you know? And it's like, gosh, that was the best time. That was the best time.
Yeah.
And then I think every decade of your life, you should have a moment like that, a something that shakes things up, just to bring yourself back to life.
Not only that, but if you're a writer, it's really difficult to pull from experience if you don't have any.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I also think you should be foolish and get out there and experience life. You know, try.
Yeah, like the time to travel, the time to get in a van and live out of your van for a year or whatever is when you're young, or maybe middle age, you know?
Yeah.
Or when you're old and you don't care anymore what happens. But it's like, you got to have those adventures, and to risk being a fool is, you know, otherwise you're not really. What is that line from Flashdance?
I don't know that movie that well.
You're dead without your dreams.
There you go. Yeah, it's interesting because my Fear of Clowns short story takes place in a truck stop. And I did go cross country in a tractor trailer and lived in a truck for a whole summer. And I pulled a lot from that experience. And it was a great experience.
Well, yeah. I mean, I remember, and I'm sure I pulled from this experience, Joe and I, our first place we lived in New York was like a single room occupancy on Gramercy Park, which is a beautiful neighborhood. But the room was like, there was no, like, you had to share a bathroom in the hall. And it was mostly like really sad, like old people living in this thing. And I was, you know, I'm just a kid. I'm terrified. Like, Joe had to stand outside the bathroom when I showered. And I was just, but like, I never felt so alive, like, because I was actually living on that edge. And you know, of course, being in love is also an exciting adventure like no other. But, you know, if I had said no to that and like, no, I think I'm just going to stay in school and be boring and I'm depressed and unhappy. You know, if anything, I wish I, like I said before, had done more of that kind of stuff. Because that's what life's all about.
It is. And I think if somebody just wants to go to college to get a career, but you can't talk to these, like, you know, my son went to school for film and like, you know, all that money you're going to owe, you could have made a film.
I mean, we've talked about that before. Does the artist really need to go to college? There are different ways of looking at that. I think the experience of being in college and away from home and around other creative young people is priceless on one hand, but you don't have to do it either. You could make a film. I would probably, I remember I had a student ask me like if he should go to college, and he wanted to be a dancer, and he was already a dancer. Well, he was like, he had the talent even as a teenager, you know, really was good. And I said, don't go to college. Well, I asked him what he wanted to do. He said he wanted to dance on Broadway. I said, well, that's a young person's profession. You're going to waste 4 years in college and you're already like on your way. And then within a couple of years, he was dancing on Broadway. So he fulfilled that dream. And I'm not saying I made him the man he is, but I encouraged him. And I think that's what we're lacking in this world for artists and creative people is encouragement. It's like, it's a disease. Like even when I go like visit my in-laws, Joe has this one brother who's, I can say this, I'm not gonna say his name, but you know, he's kind of a notorious like a crepe hanger, I think they used to call him. Everything is negative. Every time I visit, well, he starts grilling me, are your books making any money? You know, like this is the thing. And I just laugh it off, but you know, it you get a lot of that kind of stuff.
Well, that's what I was saying. There's 90% or over 90% of people are that type of person, you know, that they don't see any value in. I mean, this is across the board. People do not see value in art.
No.
You know what's
unless
funny
it
though?
It makes money.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Unless you're making money, but I'll tell you that when COVID hit, I think that was the time where people realized how much entertainment and art and books and all this stuff really mattered. Without that stuff, most people wouldn't have gotten through today. You know,
if it hadn't been for Ancient Aliens, I think I would have, you know.
Ancient Aliens. Hey, that guy was going to be here.
I love that show.
They're doing an ancient, I'll have to look it up, but the guy, the Greek guy, he's going to be locally somewhere. I love that guy. He's always like, I'm not saying it's aliens, but it's aliens.
But it's aliens. But that show, watching that show on a loop, like helped me get through those times.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't really have a problem with COVID because I got a lot of books written. I spent a lot of time alone. I was like, ooh, this is great. I have an excuse to be alone.
But let's speak about that. Like people who were foolish enough to think they were going to use their time to write books during COVID, I'm hearing a lot of people who like got things published because they had this time and they foolishly used it, you know?
Yeah.
And then it benefited them.
I mean, I wrote the Code Red during that and won that Waddy Award.
Yeah.
During COVID. I mean, I applied a lot of, I remember going to the mall and it was at Christmas time and the mall was completely empty.
Yeah.
And then when I got back in the car, I checked my email and I saw that I won. And I was like, oh, wow. But there was no one to share it with. It was like, I was like alone in the car.
It's like winning an award in a zombie apocalypse.
It was. It definitely felt like a zombie apocalypse. But yeah, anything can be turned into an opportunity for creativity. But you're only on the planet a limited time. So you have to take some risks and play the fool once in a while.
And I think older people get that more than younger. Because I know I always felt like I had all the time in the world. And then you eventually realize that's not true.
Well, you get worried. Like if I quit school, and I went back and finished my degree and everything. you know, you feel like this is it. I have to make the right decision. And sometimes, look, the stakes can be really high. Like if you have a family, you know, and this kind of stuff, and you got to feed your kids, it's harder to take those risks, and you know, you have to keep your priorities straight. But when you're young and you don't have any of the, you know.
Yeah, I work with a lot of young people, and I feel like I see none of what you're talking about. No risk,
really?
No wanting to take risks, being,
that's sad.
I don't know if it's the generation, maybe they grew up in a way of feeling they need this, and they don't really have any, like, I don't know how they can survive.
Well, what do you mean? They have like college debt and stuff like that?
Well, they're either in college, but they just, nobody seems to be chasing a dream. I don't see much of that anymore. I see people just trying to keep everything practical, and I don't
see.
What
do you think that is?
I guess.
We talked about programming.
Yeah, well, that's there, but I think just there's something else that I didn't grow up in, so I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But there's a fear, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, my first apartment was like $300 a month.
It was a studio. Those are the days that you could get an apartment
right.
for nothing.
And now all these people I know are all living with roommates. Like they can't afford anything on their own. So I think there's that. Like it's like, how am I going to, like I can, like at least back then you could get a job and live and still try to do your art.
You could get a job, a minimum wage job in this country, like when we were younger in the 80s or whatever, and have an apartment. You really could.
I did too.
And I mean, you know, maybe you couldn't afford a car. You had a bike or something, but you could live and you could have that independence.
Interesting you said that, because for whatever reason, used cars are nearly impossible. They're expensive. When I was a kid, every car I bought was under $500, like $200.
Oh, yeah. You could buy a 600 beater.
Yeah. Their beaters now are just too expensive.
We can't afford the beaters.
You can't even afford the beaters anymore.
Yeah.
But I think...
So I think that probably has a lot to do with why young people maybe are afraid to take risks, because it's taken everything just to afford that crappy apartment that they share with
five other people. Yep.
Yeah, that sounds like a drag.
It is a drag. Yeah. But I think if you're listening and this is a writing fiction podcast.
I know we're going off on some different tangents, but we always do.
But I think be foolish with your dreams. Like make that with a calculated decision. Like, okay, what can I... And really, when it comes to writing, you're not really risking much. You just really need time to work on your craft and then learn the other stuff.
There's playing the fool within your own imagination, too, which we didn't really talk about. I think that's also like a big part of this. It's not just being a fool with your life as an artist, but within that work in progress, you're taking risks.
Yeah.
Not just thinking, oh, well, you know, I better stick to this, the rules of this genre because no one will like it. Well, no one's going to like it anyway. Like it's knowing that no one really cares. Maybe that's another subject for a podcast, but the reality that no one cares is freeing.
It is. It is freeing.
Yeah. So it's to taking that risk, whether if you're writing horror, like I was telling about that author that I admired, his bravery in today's world, which seems to be very, just from reading the reviews, very, I don't know, we've kind of gone full circle. Now everyone is kind of attacking somebody for writing a horror story that would be like featured at the drive-in on any given night, you know? Like I was watching Roadhouse last night, and I know that they remade that movie. It's like, how could they remake this movie? This is so crass in such a great way, you know, with like topless strippers all everywhere and like girls. And it would not go over well with today's audience.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
But yeah, I think being foolish in your creative... your stories is also like not, like, if you want to write for a genre that people are saying is not popular now, but that's what you want to do, that's playing the fool. Like, I'm going to do this because this is what I want. Because there's so many examples of genres that failed and then somebody came along and made it popular again.
Yes, like, I think it's time that the Western comes back, don't you? It's been a long time since we've had a good Western, like movie.
Oh, you mean the movies?
Well, the movies or books.
Yeah, I mean, it has been a long time. I think a good example also is pirate movies. So pirate movies were not going to make money. If you were any time before Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, remember the pirate movie that was a big flop?
Yes, that was a big flop. But the only pirate movies before, like Pirates of the Caribbean, that were popular were back in the 50s, like with Errol Flynn, or even earlier, you know? And so they had, I think Captain Blood was a pirate movie that was inspired, that inspired George Lucas for some of the things in Star Wars. But,
okay.
But pirate movies were not going to be popular. And then I don't know how Disney did it, but they put out Jack Sparrow and Pirates of the Caribbean, and it was just, wow, that was amazing, you know?
Yeah, because we didn't realize we needed a pirate movie.
Yeah, and I think that...
Then
that,
it got overdone.
Well, you know, everything gets like done oversaturated, and then that's where we are now with superheroes. People are like, I'm done with superheroes.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
You never even got into that, but...
No, but that's not true. I loved those comic movies of the 80s, like Flash Gordon's one of my favorite. I loved Darkman, like that kind of stuff. I loved the new Joker. I'm looking forward to the one with Lady Gaga. Who knows what that's going to be like. But
yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
But those Marvel movies and all that stuff, I don't really get into.
Right. But again, Marvel is another example. Now we're using movies, but this could be books too. But when the first Spider-Man movie, directed by Sam Raimi, came out, that was 2001, 2002. When that movie came out, Marvel was bankrupt. And that movie put them in the black. Like, it brought them there. And,
oh, that's cool.
And again, nobody thought, like, superheroes. Nobody would think superhero movies. I remember it was Bruce Campbell was talking about this on a talk show. He said when he was a kid, the movies that are making money today were called B movies back then.
Yes.
And now they're the movies that are the A-list movies. And all those A-list
the genre.
Yeah. And all the A-list things that we would think from the past are now indie, you know, dramas and things like that. Like like Poor Things, which I haven't seen. I hear it's great. But that wouldn't be considered like that's not the back in the 80s and stuff, like that would have been a major, major thing.
Yeah. Well, it just kind of shows things kind of do go around, and that's why you can't really predict, and that's another reason why you should be a fool, because you don't know.
Yeah.
Sometimes the muse is speaking to you and only you.
Yes.
About something that's going to happen.
I love that. I love that because you might be denying the world of something because you felt foolish. And think about that. There might be something that you really want to do and you just feel foolish. And then that could have been the thing that blew up.
Right. And it's in the ether. Someone else will pick up on it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I love all this idea. I mean, I hope it's coming off as something positive, to be brave and to risk being a fool. Like in your life as an artist, to risk people thinking you're an idiot for doing something, who cares? And also to risk when you're writing, like, is this really far out there? Just go with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't worry about trends, because you might be the person that brings that trend back. I remember vampires were not, you know, they weren't a thing, and then they were a thing, and then they were out again, and now they're back. And
so, you know, take a risk, do something different by doing something that you want to do.
Yeah.
That maybe no one else is thinking about.
And if you're listening to this on YouTube, leave a comment. What are the risks you want to take? Or if you want to send us something on Instagram at Bookworms Horror Zine, that's us on Instagram. Let us know if you have an idea for a future episode, let us know that too.
I do believe in the creative spirit and tapping into that. And there's always a giddy rush when you're doing something that maybe is a little out there.
Yeah. And the difference is, though, the people who succeed are the ones who realize after that rush goes away, doesn't mean it's still not a good idea. It's just now work. And
that's true.
You know, and that's, I think, where you get this great idea. You probably are like on fire, just writing. And then, like, you know, you're writing. It's going to take a long time. And maybe after a month, you're like, eh. And it doesn't seem as amazing anymore.
The giddy rush is gone.
Yeah. It's like love, you know?
Yes.
You know, it becomes work. And you're going to realize, like, just because, and I think that's where it happens. Like, literally, when the giddy rush happens, I'm all for everything I'm doing. And then maybe after that wears off, that's where foolish starts to feel like, oh, like, I'm going to look, this looks silly. This is foolish.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
And that's
like,
where,
I'm an idiot for even thinking
this was a good idea.
Right. Now I'm stuck with it.
Yeah. And then you quit and you go to the next thing that comes by that seems
the
like
next
a great
giddy
idea.
Rush. Well, yeah. Some people live their entire lives going from one giddy rush relationship to the next. I don't advise it.
Yeah. And don't do that with your stories.
Right? Stop, Lucky. This dog is a fool. This dog is a clown. I found another fool quote by Shakespeare. Might be a good one to end on.
Okay.
A fool thinks himself to be wise, but a wise man knows himself to be a fool.
Yeah, there's a philosophical thing just like that. It says the one who knows does not, and the one who does not knows. I'm messing it up, but that's the same concept.
Yeah.
Well, let's get...
So embrace your inner fool.
Yeah, embrace the fool. And follow us on all our socials and things like that. And please support the show. If you're getting anything out of this, you know, you can buy Bookworms or buy a t-shirt or just give us a 5-star review. That would help too.
Well, look, the Bookworms are, that is in, I think that whole publication is in the spirit of the fool.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We have fun with it. The artwork that Charlie Radcliffe does is fun and foolish and silly. And this is what we wanted it to be. We don't want it to be a serious, I mean, we take it seriously, you know, but it's like in the spirit of fun.
And people would say we're foolish for not doing digital downloads with it.
That's true.
And they might be right. Like in a sense of financially right now.
Yeah.
But I think that the core value of us doing it as an analog media, that core value means enough to us to be foolish with that idea, because to us it matters.
Right.
More than, because we feel there's other people like us who also respect that analog experience. And so that's the main thing, that we want to find those people. And that will happen. That will grow. And to sort of, you know, taint it with a digital download, I think isn't really what we're about.
Right.
So, all right. Well, that's all we got for this week. We'll be back in a week and not sure what we're going to do, but we'll find something fun.
Oh yeah. Always. It's good talking to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.